Hey, what's up, y'all? This is part two of a multi-part episode. So if you have not heard part one yet, then by all means, go back and listen to part one, which should be the previous episode, before listening to this one. And if you have listened to part one, then by all means, go ahead and enjoy what's to come. And here we go. But part of the self-flattering trope, because one thing about the White West is, you know, the Enlightenment, Descartes, you know, I think therefore I am, they are very in love with the idea of themselves as the archetype, the embodiment of reason, not just intelligence, because that's one of the things that they try to use to differentiate themselves from Asians. Like, you know, when someone points out Asian people have higher IQs on average, you know, what do you say about that? They're like, oh, there's something that's like this raw horsepower of the brain, but we have enlightenment values. Like we have this certain form of intelligence that is reason. Like, they're just doing rote memorization and, you know, a lot of intellectual horsepower, but we have something that is enlightened intellect or whatever. So how America, it's not this hegemonic thing of force that just basically came and wiped out indigenous people, enslaved a whole other race of people, and just expanded by force and strong-arming. No, it's what is the myth of America? Enlightenment ideas, that it just is the American dream, American values. These are not our values. Whenever Donald Trump comes in, people say, this isn't the America I know. He goes, no, that's pretty much the purest embodiment of America. He's not the myth that you know. But to go back to the Flash Gordon thing, where you say, like, they do the same thing back to the Mongol horde that, you know, they accuse the Mongol horde of doing to them, and they justify it by saying that we had to do it. I think it's slightly different. I think they do the same thing that they accuse the Mongol horde of doing, but because of splitting and projection, they project it all onto the Mongol horde. They say it's, you know, this is how they expand their ideas. But then they tell a lie about themselves. They project all the good stuff into themselves. And they have this idea that we take over and win over the women with our reason, with our enlightenment values. Like, we're just presenting the best case. So basically, Ming wants to win over Earth and the white men from Earth and whatever by trickery and force and whatever. He's an evil. He's trying to imprison and rape Dale. That's like a Flash Gordon's love interest. But what's the fiction about how the white guy is taking over and deposing Ming? He's first saving Ming's people from Ming. You know, he's such a good guy, especially the women, conveniently. You know, the trope is that the Mongol is stealing the white guy's women and raping them and turning them into harems and sex slaves. The white guy is just showing up, and he's just showing himself to be, he's just winning her over by being superior. Like, when Flash Gordon comes and wins over, when Ming tried to get Flash's woman, he's getting her by force, by evil, by, you know, tricking her, like he's using mind control rays, which I think is a metaphor for, like, opium. Like, you know, because there used to be these old tropes of, like, the Asian guy for the Fu Manchu getting the white woman strung out on opium and turning her into, like, a sex slave. Like he's getting her by evil means and putting her to ill-gotten use, whereas the trope is always the white guy shows up. It's just a natural choice. She's just optimizing her value. Like, you know, he's the most decent, he's the most enlightened, you know, he's not as patriarchal, even though in reality it's not true, but this is the self-flattering fiction they want to believe. You know, he wants her to be more than what the Asian man wants her to be. You know, he's more enlightened, you know, he's better looking, he's more reason. You know, it's just like, here's the dirty glass of water, here's a clean glass of water. I don't have to force a clean glass of water on you. I just got to show you that's a better glass of water. And and that's how Ming's daughter comes to Flash. Just because he's just the most dashing, the most virtuous, the most heroic, you know, she can't help but be converted by just him being him.
And you got to think that, you know, and this is a while ago. I mean, these are pretty old tropes. And what I've noticed, because, like, history seems to accelerate, right? Like, there seems to have been more change in the last 2-3 months in terms of how Asian people, you know, relate to white people in this country than there has been in maybe my whole life. Within just my lifetime, there's probably been more change than there was since the 1930s. Or like, it, the change seems to be really, it takes a long time to happen, but then when it happens really fast. And when I look at tropes from like a long time ago like that, it makes me think that probably did reflect a certain kind of reality in terms of how backwards Asia was in that sense relative to the sort of industrial age powers and the expansionist Western colonialists and all that stuff. And there was such a huge imbalance that these sort of like Tarzan and Jane type, or whatever you want to call it, you know, these sort of like, you know, these mythical, these from our perspective as Asians, these sort of like mythical white men from the future coming in and liberating and then modernizing the Asians, sort of, that's an old trope. And then I think it became clearer over time that like Asian women seem to be the battleground in a way. They almost were consciously or subconsciously seem to become a sort of battleground as between, and I'm generalizing here, so I'm probably going to piss people off when I say this, but seem to be a sort of mental battleground between Asian men and white men, particularly here in America, that the preferences of Asian women were somehow the sort of referee or the judge as to some conflict that was happening between white men and Asian men. And that was a sort of thing that was going on for a while. But then now, in this era where it's like just as the project of like American expansion westward sort of has hit a brick wall and we're just sort of in naked confrontation with China now, that the attitude at home suddenly shifts and it's just like, you know what, fuck all of you, right? Like, and now you see Asian women are not being wooed between, you know, it's not like some sort of battleground between white men who are like, oh, you know, I'm more, like you say, I'm more charming, I'm more the ideal, you know, whatever. It's more just like, just harassing Asian women and racially abusing them and jumping in their DMs and telling them to die, you know, like.
Yeah. Here's something interesting. I'll let you finish with that.
I mean, it has really changed in terms of these sort of subtle and almost romantic notions about Asian women.
I'll tell you what I think is really interesting is that I think there's been a kind of a switch, because I feel like that's how they used to treat black women. Now it's kind of become like reverse. Where now,
you mean, just to clarify, so you mean it used to be more just openly hostile to black women?
Yeah, they would like be very openly hostile to black women. Right. Like black women, this is what I think, you know, was kind of happening, right? Black women, I think, were much more defined or viewed as having a closeness to their men. And by that, I don't mean like in terms of being like more loyal so much as they're kind of in the same boat together, you know, like so it's like the black women, I think, are a little more stained in the mind of the white supremacists by their association with black men than the Asian woman is, like because in all that like degradation and oppression, they're like really kind of thrown together in like the same projects or ghettos or neighborhoods or plantations, you know. There was this kind of I think part of it had to do with the rights being so far apart between at least superficial rights between like white people and black people, all the segregation and stuff. But there's been kind of this thing where now with all the strides being made, especially because I think black women are making strides at a faster rate than black men right now. Like, they're being educated at a higher rate. They're entering the workforce at a higher rate. They're in upper management more. The prison industrial complex has a lot of guys in prison, being killed by each other, by the police. You know, it's kind of different, but there's this kind of sense now where it's like, it's kind of changed where the black woman is redeemable, but the black man represents everything primitive and backwards and whatever. And I think this is where I made the mistake. I said that the Asian man is the one that all the things about being Asian get stuck with, but the Asian woman isn't. And I think I was wrong. And if I had to rephrase it, you know, based on what you said, you've convinced me otherwise. I think what it is, you're right. Like, the people like that Bertram guy in Mad Men, or that guy that I said was like a Victorian equivalent of a weeaboo in the Dorian Gray thing. Like, they have a romantic view of Asia, but it's kind of split. Like, there's a bunch of stuff that they call, like, oh, this is the good stuff. There's a bunch of stuff that, you know, the racist in them says this is the bad stuff. I think what it is they're able to put all the stuff that makes them racist associated with the men, but all the stuff that they fetishize in the Asian culture, they try to associate with the women. And it's not always a clean break, you know, because there's some things like martial arts and stuff like that that's just so cool, you can't help but like it. But one thing I notice is any chance they get, they try to see if they can put the martial arts in a white guy. You know, like, like the show Kung Fu, like, you know, like, make it David Carradine. They want to resist, you know, having a Asian guy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, one of the reasons Bruce Lee was so famous was apparently some historical beef between Bruce Lee, who was one of, I mean, he was actually part of the Chinese, the Southern Chinese Kung Fu royalty, right? He was actually part of the lineage of, like, actual, quote, Kung Fu heroes in Southern China. But his thing was that he wanted to teach white people. And that, I mean, I don't, whether how true that is, I don't know. But, like, that is the story in America is, oh, see, Bruce Lee was different than the other ones because he was open-minded enough that he was actually willing to pass on his knowledge to white people.
Yeah, right? same way that the most redeeming aspect of Malcolm X to the white imagination is that he eventually realized it was wrong to hate white people. If you break it down to them, that's the most important thing Malcolm X ever learned or realized or said, was that, you know, hey, white people aren't so bad. That's
right.
Yeah.
And I have noticed that difference. I think that I'm seeing a lot of things in media, that images in media, like the way white men are celebrated for just having black partners, like the Reddit guy, Alexis, is that his name?
Yes.
Or Alex Ohanian and Serena, and of course the Prince Harry and Meghan Markle, that used to be like John and Yoko. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. And that's what I mean by the switch. Instead of like, hey, all black people are, you know, in the same boat. Like, I might go to the black whorehouse and, you know, have sex. I might rape the black slave. I have a strong physical attraction to the black woman, but I'm going to pretend that I don't. Spread this fiction that I don't. And I don't want to be seen with one as a partner, even though it's an open secret amongst all white guys that we're jonesing for them, you know. And you know, there's always a big investment with white guys always pretending that they didn't find the black women attractive. And now this is kind of thing where, you know, all the tropes that we described, where it's like, hey, like, if you look at the discourse now, that's all you see. It's like, hey, the black men are like the Ming the Merciless or whatever, or they're like the patriarchal Asian guys in Joy Luck Club, where it's like they're kind of all the regressive parts of the black race are in the men. Whereas before, you know, it was both. The black women were Jezebels and what's it called? Sapphires, and were single mothers, as much as the black guys were thugs and whatever. The black woman's kind of been rehabilitated to a degree that the black man hasn't in the modern discourse. And yeah, now it's like you said, like now it's, the narrative is becoming, hey, some white woke bae, you know, is showing up like Flash Gordon and is wooing the black woman away from her regressive males of her race. And like, you see a lot of things like the show and movie like Dear White People, all these shows on Netflix. There's this thing on these shows on Netflix and CW now, like, for example, Riverdale, The Hate U Give, all this stuff where it's like the black guys are kind of on the periphery. It's kind of different than what they said it used to be. Like now the black guys are on the periphery, but the black girl is kind of mixed more into the social world and the romantic world of the other characters. Like I heard on Riverdale, basically, like, Archie has been with all the women of color. There was a show called Quantico that I told you about that I think is an amazing show. Not because it's any good, it's terrible, but it's such a white guy fantasy. It's like, it's a whole bunch of women of every single race. And it's a total example of the worldview of world as the white man's harem. Like, all the men are white, but all the women are diverse. Priyanka Chopra, there's a black woman there's a Latina woman, there's an Asian woman, and there's a Muslim woman, and they're all wooed by white guys. They're all basically like a bunch of Flash Gordons, and they're in the FBI. And the minority men, basically, the black woman had a black husband we've never seen. He's an ex. She lost him because she cheated on him with her white FBI coworker, you know? And her black son is a school shooter who was an American Taliban type who was wooed by basically a bunch of, like, you know, radicals. And so he's, like, basically a Columbine. I'm like, that doesn't even make sense. Like how many black kids do Columbine type of American Taliban things, you know? But he's just always angry and incompetent and just holding the mother back. The Muslim men are only there for the Muslim women in the FBI to be infiltrated with and trying to bust them. Like the only Muslim guys are all terrorists, you know? And the Muslim women don't have any genuine relations with them.
That was the hate you give too, in a way, right? Like all the black men were sort of irredeemably involved in the drug trade. And essentially it was sort of like, the police are racist, but we're also drug dealers, right? And then, but the—
Or relatives. So they're not viable partners because they're
relatives. Or relatives, yeah.
But all the ones that weren't relatives were somehow irredeemable, or they were redeemable because they were dead. Like, which is a complaint that we always say about Black Lives Matter, is that we say, like, the problem with a lot of these people who make their bones as activists nowadays on Black Lives Matter somehow only like dead black men. Like, dead black men are angels because they can use them to come up, but they're also spreading all these tropes about black men being trash, black men being like the number one or number two cause of death for black women, which is not true. You know, like they're spreading that same "Ming the Merciless" or "Our men are savages" trope, you know, save us from them. While at the same time, like it would be like if Flash Gordon had the extra added element of Ming's daughter is also an activist for dead Mongol soldiers, you know, on top of that. Like, you know, it's like,
I gotta tell you, when I was watching The Hate U Give, that it really did feel like I recognized that, like, there was an attitude about black people in that movie that was, like, recognizable to me, particularly around the way they treated the girl, and they sort of emphasized the exceptionality of her interracial relationship while also depicting sort of white racism and stuff. It was very strange. Like, there was a lot of mixed signals going on in that movie that
she was the focal point of progress.
She was, yeah, she was contested space, right? Like, everyone was sort of, she was the prize in a way.
Yes.
Everyone was sort of fighting. She was sort of the battleground for a bunch of different ideologies and race, like, people. And she was ultimately the prize. Who she goes to is sort of the just outcome of the movie, right?
And she was also contested even with the white women, because, you know, one white girl is like her friend, but the other one uses competition. There's a sense that she's the focal point, even as a competition. Like, she's not only the biggest prize, but the biggest threat. She's the focal point in that aspect too. She's the biggest prize and the biggest threat. Like, she's not a sidekick to the white girl. She's the one who's going to dethrone their place with the white man.
And it just, yeah, there was just something recognizable in it that I've seen Asians in that same situation in films and you know, stories and things.
Because look at that used to be a thing with Asian women too. Like, there used to be this thing where Asian women are taking all the white men. Like, not only are they like the contested space or thing of desire, but there was this big thing about this fear of Asian women as competition to, like, the white woman, or, you know, replacing. And do you ever see, like, Joan Walsh's the journalist Joan Walsh?
I've heard the name. Yeah.
Oh, she, I think, has let me look. She used to be an MSNBC. I think she's at The Nation now. She's been at The Daily Beast. She's been all over. She's like this liberal. She's this liberal reporter.
Former editor-in-chief of Salon and author of the book "What's the Matter with White People." Okay, I got an idea. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, she's pretty much
editor-in-chief of Salon. Got it.
Yeah, yeah, she's pretty much NPR white. Like she hates Bernie Sanders. She is always with the centrist. She's kind of crazy and stuff. She was she wrote this thing that kind of came back to haunt her called Asian Women, Caucasian Men, and it was just basically like a screed complaining about Asian women taking Caucasian.
No way, really?
Caucasian men. Yeah.
No way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
kind of looked this up.
It happened in the 2000s, where I think it was just kind of more acceptable for that to happen, and it's kind of hard to find now. It's been like scrubbed from like everywhere.
Wait, it's a book. It's an entire book.
Or? It was a book. Oh, I thought it was like a blog post.
I'm looking it up right now, and there's not many. I've searched Joan Walsh, Asian Women, Caucasian Men, and there's like one hit, or there's maybe two hits.
Oh, you're
there's
you're
not right. many books, but it's a book apparently.
Mm-hmm. Oh wait, it looks like I'm looking at it now. It looks like it appeared in San Francisco Sunday Examiner and Chronicle 1990, and that's the book. And it was within that book, and it was 7 pages. So it's a 7-page article in that book. It was 1990, and
it's in the Examiner and Chronicle. Oh, I see.
Gotcha. Yeah, and people dug it up, and it was just like kind of
do you have it?
No, I've been trying to find it because I just want to kind of see it, but I'm having
I'm gonna find someone that has like LexisNexis or something that can get it.
Yeah, please find it, because I would love to read it and stuff. And I feel like that's something that could happen in the 90s, because the 90s and the 2000s were still, you know, surprisingly like unwoke. But I think either you or Oxford were the ones, from Escape from Plan A, were the ones that pointed it out now. But this idea that Asian women have gotten such a kind of bad stereotypical rap from stories like that, like, you know, Joan Walsh has kind of painted them as these people who, you know, aspiring to replace white women or honorary whites. A lot of Asian men have kind of said that stereotype about them. It's kind of become more mainstream. You can't really use them anymore as shields against looking racist. Like, you know, like now, like I think when you watch something like those old movies like The World of Susie Wong or Sayonara, or even if you look at analogs for them, like, you know, Ming the Merciless and his daughter, there's a sense that, you know, there's something noble and liberating that the white man is doing by his dalliance in going with the Asian woman. But now, like,
that's a black woman now. You want, I mean, if you want to get that shield, I mean, not to be too blunt about it, but you should date a black woman, not an Asian woman.
Yeah, exactly. You have to do with
the amount of like the amount of, you know, press and attention that a white, you know, a famous white man will have just for dating a black woman is much higher than if you were to date an Asian. If you were to date an Asian woman, you're in like Nicolas Cage territory. You're made fun of, or even like Woody Allen.
Yeah, like, Sun Yi is basically treated like the resurgence of the dragon lady stereotype now. Like people see her as like,
oh yeah,
somebody who you know,
broke a home.
Yeah, broke a home. Yeah. She wanted that those white resources, that whatever. Like, it's not only not good for looking like enlightened or anti-racist or whatever. Asian women have become enough maligned or negatively stereotyped or treated like model minorities who are also like scheming to replace white women, that the white guy doesn't really, if anything, he looks worse in a way. But like you said, the black women can get him that cachet, you know, for being enlightened, open-minded, that Asian women used to be able to get him back in the day.
I think two things happened. One was that it seemed that it became so prevalent, the white male Asian female coupling, that it actually caused Asian women themselves to question it, where they were trying to, it was weird. The people who were calling it out most were actually Asian women in relationships with white men. And it seemed to be a sort of reaction to sort of the sheer prevalence of it. But from the women themselves is something I've noticed. And then the other thing that happened, I think, is just straight up anti-Asian racism. And I think that you can only get so close through these relationships up to the point where you just butt up against basic reality, which is that there's just a ton of anti-Asian sentiment that goes way beyond any part, you know, interpersonal relationship. And I think that's that just, it couldn't break through that fundamental truth is
and that would add that a lot of that anti-Asian racism, you know, in addition to coming from the men, because Frank Chin has this concept he calls racist love, and he says like and it's also kind of splitting everything because it comes back to the original topic of what we're talking about, that the racism isn't just about hating stuff. There's something called racist love. So he's like, if Fu Manchu or Ming the Merciless and Yellow Peril is an example of racist hate, it's kind of the dark side and the light side of the forest, and you know, the shadow and the persona, you know, all this stuff about the balance. There has to be racist love, and Charlie Chan is the racist love. You know, if one black trope, if the black brute or the black buck, the racist hate, then the mammy is the racist love. Like Congress, you know, mammies are so revered. Congress was even going to create a mammy statue until the NAACP. A mammy national monument, not a national monument.
Like in D.C.?
Yeah, it was going to be a giant statue, and black people protested it, but there was actually going to be a mammy monument erected. It's called the National Mammy Monument. It was the Mammy Memorial. Yeah, and it got shut down. It's really crazy stuff. If anybody Googles Mammy Memorial, it's right there. And, I mean, there's a reason why Aunt Jemima is on the box. Like, she's an example of like racist love. But yeah, they argued about it on the floor of Congress, and they were going to erect it until a lot of people fought against it. You know, that the NAACP shut it down. So it's very funny. It was white people fighting to get a statue of a black person up, and black people fighting to put it down. It's like the reverse of Representation Matters. You know, because but it was kind of funny because the representation that the black white people were trying to put was about, you know, the mammy, you know, whereas the black people were like, no, we don't want that. But I just find it kind of funny that it was kind of reversed like that, because usually we think of black people fighting for type of representation and white people like fighting the diversity. But, you know, it was the opposite here. It was a kind of perverted form of that.
I think it's, you know, there may be an interesting inversion going on where it's like, I feel like open hostility towards hostile racism towards black people in America has become more and more disguised in a way. And it's like, I mean, I don't know how you feel, but I feel like for Asians, it has kind of gone the other way. Whereas we used to be considered model minority and people wanted to say very nice things about us. Now in the time of coronavirus, like people are just straight up calling us viruses and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And what's interesting to me is like, you know, it's not, this is a new experience for me as an Asian, is when people say racist stuff against Asians these days, it's both openly racist, but also it's like the president saying it, and it's like half of Congress saying it, and the people who aren't saying it are still kind of underwriting the ideas behind it, which is that the Chinese people are, you know, they have poor sanitation, and so this happened and stuff. And it's racist tropes that goes right back to the kinds of teasing that, like, say, an Asian girl would get in school about, you know, her house smelling weird or her lunch smelling weird. Yeah. Or something. Like, it goes right back to those emotionally charged sort of discriminations.
Yeah.
But it's not hidden. It's just out in the open as perfectly acceptable political discourse. And I think that is why, you know, tables have turned a little bit, because there's really no way now to sort of see a white savior in this when, like, almost all of America is like, oh yeah, well, the Chinese people are dirty. I mean, come on, you know?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I forgot to finish the point.
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah.
No, it's my own fault. I forgot to finish it, but it ties into what you were going to say. Like, yeah. Like, the reason I was bringing up the Mammy Memorial and the racist love, what I was going to say is, I think what those white guys who are supposedly saving the Asian women and, you know, bringing them over as war brides and making these movies valorizing themselves, you know, or making, you know, as saving these women from a backwards life in Asia. Because, you know, Suzy Wong was like that. She's a prostitute. The Asian men aren't helping her or saving her, you know, whatever. But they're kind of leaving out why the guy is there, because it's a military base. Why is he there? Like, you came by force the same way Ming came by force, but you get to paint yourself as a liberator, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that guy brought her over and married her. That was still a type of racism, but it was racist love. But I think a lot of the racism, when you were saying how the Asian racism started growing, I think a lot of the racism was coming from white women. Because, you know, there's this kind of myth of that white women are co-minorities that, you know, that you don't really treat them as white men. You treat them other minorities. Like there's this myth that a lot of people like to pretend, especially in liberal circles, of, hey, white men are the bad guys. It's white patriarchy. And all the rest of us are getting beat down by white men. And, you know,
white women are the black people of white people or something.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, I mean, but that was an actual song by John Lennon and Yoko Ono. John Lennon and Yoko Ono had a song, Woman is the Nigger of the World.
Oh, God. Are you serious?
Yes, that is a serious. I mean, it's so tone deaf. No one wants to mention this song now. You would think the song didn't exist, but John Lennon and Yoko Ono had a song, Woman is the Nigger of the World. Hard R, you know, there's no A back there. I mean, not that that would have been better, but yeah. So
he got carried away back then, man.
He got really carried away. I mean, he was kind of a stereotype himself with the way he got carried away. But yeah, so basically this idea, like the white woman gets to travel back and forth across the line. Like, it's a crossing a picket line. You know, she tries to come over on the minority or oppressed side when it's convenient, but she's still marrying the white guy. She's still inheriting, you know, money from her white dad. She's still having a white son that she wants to protect, which is, you saw with the Kavanaugh nomination, a lot of white women mobilize around him because they're like, a world where this is the new normal is a world that is going to one day go against my white son, you know. It's going to be a world that might one day trap my husband or whatever. Like, they kind of know that the bread is buttered on the white side. You know, we might dabble with the minorities, you know, as a way. Like, the reason why white women can enjoy this whole balkanization thing of intersectionality and this whole hyper-balkanization and dabble in it is because, like, they're 80% of the population white people, and they have more than 80% of the resources, I'm sure. So splitting up that pie is, you know, fine because it's a pretty big pie, you know, but it's very different if you and I both say, hey, let's break up your pie and I break up my thing, but you have a pie and I have crumbs. It's it's different. So, you know, they tricked us into hyper balkanizing, but we're splitting up like crumbs, whereas they're splitting up a pie, and it's ridiculous, especially because at the end of the day they're combining the pieces back together. It's just like, hey, this is still our pie. I just want a bigger slice of it, you know.
You had this you did a pod that I really enjoyed. It was a solo pod. It was, the title was called Bullet Bags, and I gather bullet bags was, I think, a word that was used on Twitter in a very hostile way to describe black men as being nothing but bullet bags. And I thought that was really interesting because it showed that there was an interpretation. You know, there was I'm sure that there are still a lot of like black men being killed by cops, but do you notice that there hasn't been as much media attention paid to that because we just don't have the bandwidth right now? Like, we're talking about coronavirus all day.
But that's been gone for like a while, because I think the DeRays and Black Lives Matter of the world were kind of meant to dissipate the energy, because they just made it a circus, and then they end up pivoting to Me Too and different things, and now they're just irrelevant. Like, because now we have no attention span to hold anything. So the moment you have the mic or the spotlight, you have to maximize it while you can. And I think those people were picked by the white establishment to squander the moment. They were given the most attention.
Well, it worked because as someone who was, you know, consuming the media attention to all of this and paying a lot of attention to, you know, just a string of videos that from Michael Slager to, you know, just so many of them leading up to St. Louis, what happened to it? What I found interesting about that term bullet bags was that it seemed to be a term from the interpretation as of that whole thing as a sort of gendered racism. Like, this was a specific thing done to black men and not to black people as a whole. That I found very disturbing. Do you know what I mean? Like, that the police violence would be seen as a gendered crime.
But the thing is, it is a gendered crime.
It is, but that it would be interpreted almost to the point of saying, oh, this is a specific problem between black men.
Exactly. It's not a problem for us because they're trying to...
Exactly,
trying
that's
to
what
escape,
I mean, yeah.
They're trying to escape it anyway, because the girl that said that, when people dug into her tweets, she was doing all these tweets fetishizing white men.
Oh, that's so, my point, is that the bullet bag, it was a term apparently used by a black woman on Twitter, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I just found that was like...
But she didn't find her her fortunes wedded to black men in the black community, you know? But the thing is, to me, even if she's not with a black person, she's going to have a half-black son. So the problem is going to happen again anyway. Kind of like how on the Hapless board, they always talk about how the Asian woman who is self-hating and gets with the white guy, what happens when she has the Asian son, you know? And now there's an Asian boy in the house, you know? Like, what happens when there's a black boy in the house? Like, and you spend all this time calling black men bullet bags or saying the police aren't shooting you. Like, I think a lot of people are going to be driven crazy. I think there's this Disney Channel propaganda that these people grew up with. You know, they grew up like in these suburbs without a genuinely black experience or community. They grew up watching things like what you're seeing now with Riverdale, Disney Channel sitcoms where, you know, or Saved by the Bell with like Lisa Turtle. Like there's no black guy in Saved by the Bell, but there's a Lisa Turtle. She's there with the white girls and the white guy. Like, I think a lot of people, they've been propagandized into this kind of thing where, you know, if you leave the black guy behind, you can get accepted. I think the realities are not going to work out that way, especially when they start having black sons or something and things like that.
Yeah.
Or when they start realizing that, wait, they still see me as an N-word too. And in times of stress, in times of whatever, you know, because kind of like how I think one of the reasons, for example, why the cultural cachet of Asian women and their ability to be used as human shields against looking racist or whatever is that white women gave the game away. White women, you know, said, you know, forget this feminism, forget this female solidarity. They're taking the white man. They're taking my place. White supremacy is for white man and white woman, not white man, white woman, and Asian woman. Like, I feel like white women played a very instrumental part exposing the idea of the Asian woman. And that's when you have the people like the Joan Walters of the world painting Asian women as these kind of materialistic schemers who are fake, being submissive to kind of woo white men and taking away from white women and stuff like that. And I think there's gonna be a lot of wake up calls. I'm telling you, if this project to turn black women into the new Asian women, which means the new replacement white women, you're going to see a lot of former so-called intersectional white female allies start showing like their ass a lot when it comes to racism. You're gonna see a lot of that. Like,
I'm sure you can probably already start finding it when it comes to like Meghan Markle and stuff. And
oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. Meghan Markle, I'm sure you see it.
Yeah, I'm sure it's already there.
But I'll tell you where you're really gonna see it. Mm-hmm. If a black woman becomes president before a white woman, I think you're really gonna see it, because now they're gonna be forced to say, okay, she's a woman, but she's not a white woman, and that's what we really wanted. When we said our turn, we meant our turn as in white woman, not just woman. Like this is a black woman. She's not really scratching that itch. They're gonna kind of either be forced to admit it, or they can't admit it because it gives away the lie of intersectionality and race blind feminism. So they're gonna have to have all these fake reasons as to why they can't stand this black woman president.
The other thing I think is that there's just too much liberal cover against liberal racism these days. So it's like, this is what I mean, like as an Asian, seeing what's going on around us is like, there's something fundamentally, did you know, there was that book that, there was an article about it that we had DM'd about. It was a Chinese American woman who wrote, she just recently published a book, and it talks about her interracial relationship with a white guy and the sort of discomfort that arises from that relationship being living in this era, you know. And I think by this era means like, you know, where there is less and less liberal cover given to anti-Asian sentiments, you know, and it just creates this real dissonance. I think she was trying to write about that. I've not read that book, but she was describing it in an article about the dissonance that's created, where you're sort of like, you know, whether you want to or not, essentially signaling that you're fine with, you know, like that this is, you know, there's nothing about this interracial relationship has no political meaning. It has no meaning or whatever. Or if it does, it's a progressive meaning. Like this is showing that, you know, there's something inherently progressive about an Asian woman being with a white man. It shows that we can cross the racial boundary and all these things. And it just doesn't, it's very difficult to maintain that concept when even like liberal white people are just openly sort of anti-Asian in their way.
I think kind of what happens, right, is that I think things have changed on the ground where it's like, okay, a lot of white women kind of viewed you as a threat, and you've kind of been outed, whether true or not, whether fair or not, you've been kind of outed as a climber, a schemer, somebody chasing whiteness, you know, who's trying to be honorary white, you know. Combine that with the model minority thing, that's one of the ironies now, is that now, you saw that with Shane Gillis and, you know, him using anti-Asian slurs and stuff. A lot of people were defending Shane Gillis, was like, that's not punching down. And they started trying to put all these stats about Asian people, you know, and now suddenly, like, a lot of Asian people who are buying into the model minority thing are now put in a place where people are trying to weaponize it against them, because people were trying to say, racists who don't really believe this, but we're just, you know, being intellectually disingenuous, were saying, aren't you guys model minorities? You know, you're trying to, like, steal oppression valor from black people. It's not like being in front of black people. Here's a bunch of stats. Like, oh, it's not even punching that. Like, someone's trying to say that, like, Asian people are doing better than a lot of white people. It's actually punching up. And it's just like this kind of bullshit distraction argument. So I think it's kind of in this weird place now where it's like the old relationships had this kind of universal, fundamental kind of battleground that was being presented. I mean, much as old Susie Wong type movies or Sayonara, Marlon Brando, where it's like, oh, this is East meets West. This is racism being conquered on a whole cultural level. This is making a major headway into, this is up there with integration in the South. This is up there with Loving versus Virginia, where you're making a whole cultural shift. Now it's just this sexual marketplace, neoliberal, individual, atomized, transactional. Now, like you said,
it's a branded transaction. It has a certain product packaging to it that resonated. Yeah. Like everyone can read that packaging. But I feel
The social capital that the white guy gets from it, gone, because he can't present himself as some grand liberator. It's not some kind of romantic. Now he's just an opportunist who, you know, maybe he bought low and sold high. You know, like it's not the same thing. The white women have nothing to gain from it. So I think that's where a lot of this, it's cooler than ever to be racist against Asian people, including Asian women, is like coming from. There's no real great grand narrative to be gotten from it. You're just one more marketplace competitor in this world of everyone out for themselves, individual transactions, which is the sexual marketplace.
Yeah, and the standards go up. The standards for a white woke bait go up a lot in this environment for those who kind of want to be the woke bait for an Asian woman, because like I said, I think right now for a liberal white guy, it's like pretty easy to maintain like a black friendliness, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you can say Black Lives Matter, and then you can react very negatively to anytime someone says Blue Lives Matter, All Lives Matter, and just be like, oh, give me this. You dunk on Trump. You know what I mean? And there's like a clear set of things, signposts that you gotta hit.
And there's minimum.
It's not very much, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's not very much. You would go,
not in the age of Trump. You know, like,
yeah.
You just say, I hate Trump, and that pretty much gets you on the right side. But for Asians now, you know, it's different because, like, you know, everyone is after us right now. Right. So
in a bad way.
And so for an Asian woman, and I think like these women who are in these relationships, I think that they do have to maintain their plausible, like, the believability for themselves too. I mean, they actually have to believe that they're with a white woke bae. I don't think it's all I think the stereotype is that they're just clout chasing, but I think they have to believe it themselves too. And it's hard when there's just so many signals being given off of this sort of just, you know, this disdain and loathing for Asians, that I don't think white guys know how to do it anymore. And they don't, you know what I mean? Like, they don't know that a lot of the stuff that they're saying is racist and distasteful to Asian people. So the standards have really gone up. I mean,
but also, like, what are they going to get from it? Like, for example, if you're a white guy with an Asian woman, what are people going to jump to first? Are they going to jump to, wow, this guy is really enlightened, you know, whatever. Like, if you're with a black woman, and say she has an Afro, someone might think, man, this guy, maybe he's into, like, maybe he reads Nkrumah or Kwame Ture. You never know. Maybe this guy reads a lot of bell hooks or whatever. Like, when you see him with an Asian woman, the first thing they might think is, oh, I'm Mark Zuckerberg or Woody Allen, or maybe, you know, some white investment banker, you know, mm-hmm. who has an Asian lawyer girlfriend, you might think of the Airbnb couple. Remember the Airbnb couple?
Yeah.
Where the Asian woman and the white guy. And
she was the attack dog for like the black guests. And
Yeah. And a lot of Asian people were kind of calling her out as a type. They're like, oh, look at her. She's that Asian woman. She's the attack dog for her white husband and all this stuff. Like, there's not a lot of social.
But on the other hand, like, what do you get though? Like, also, just in this day and age, you get a girlfriend or a partner. Like, that's, I think, in this day and age itself seems to be like quite the incentive for people to just even have a partner anymore. Because as far from what I from what I'm seeing, it's like people just aren't getting together. Like,
no. That's true. Like, you just got a partner. But I'm saying if you're just one of these people, because there's some people
who's trying to play the game, that trying to play the image game in terms of what you're allowed to say. Yeah, like the hey, I have an Asian wife. That doesn't say anything anymore. everyone on Twitter, if you try to bring that up, they're like, that's. Doesn't really. That's like I have a black, like my best friend is black, kind of thing. Like
because for some things that you want to do, for some things, like I give an example. This comedian called Gary Owen. He's a white guy who just into black spaces and does comedy, you know. But I think if he was a white guy married to a white woman, he would look way more like an interloper, you know. You kind of have to have somebody with you. Like, I think that's one of the reasons why Justin Timberlake kind of like wears thin, because at the end of the day, the more you see of his life, he's with Jessica Biel, he has a white kid, all his homeboys, when he's not trying to use like people like Timberland and Pharrell in songs and as ornamentation, you know, you start realizing, okay, this guy's really a white guy. His ex is Britney Spears, all his friends are white. We see pictures of his wedding and stuff. And, you know, I think people kind of waking up that, hey, he's using this ornamentation. But this Gary Owen guy, even though he's clearly racist and anti-black, he has his black wife, his kids are black. It's kind of different.
How do you think black men react to that?
Well, a lot of them thinking like he's clearly an interloper and he's fake, but you'd be surprised how many black guys will be like, oh, he's cool, he's invited to the cookout. There's a lot of black guys online. I don't get them. I think they're weirdos, but you know, they love the guy and they are wowed by that. And I'll give another example, Barack Obama. Barack Obama wasn't married to Michelle, like Barack Obama married to Michelle made him so untouchable that nobody cares that he didn't do anything for black people. He has his black wife and his black daughters. And Michelle made him so bulletproof that I think Michelle basically indirectly helped Biden get where he is. Like, all these black boomers voting for Biden like crazy. That comes from
because of the Michelle Barack effect.
Because basically Biden is where he is from the Obama's bulletproofness. Obama's bulletproofness comes from his dark-skinned black wife, then indirectly, like, you know, she's basically, that one connection to a black woman has basically propped up two careers in a crazy way. If Barack Obama was with a white or Asian woman, forget about it. His previous person that he proposed to, he had dated all white or
mixed-race Asian. Sheila Miyoshi Yeager, yeah.
Yeah, mixed-race Asian, and he proposed to a mixed-race Asian, white and Asian woman who turned him down, and I think Michelle Obama was his first black
You know, girlfriend. My theory on Obama is that he is, actually, if you dig into his sort of upbringing, he's actually quite Asian. You know, he lived in Indonesia, of course.
Yeah, that's true.
They downplay a lot of that, but, like, he has... His sister is half Asian. She's married to a Chinese guy. He's got a half brother who looks a lot like him, who lives in China, and he's married to a Chinese woman. So he's got these family photos of him and Michelle going to like weddings, and it's just him with like a bunch of Asian people.
That's a real good point. You know, a reason why I think people miss it too is because in general, the Asian culture, I think, is very similar to like the immigrant. I think we spoke about this, how a lot of times Haitian immigrant stories or Nigerian immigrant stories will sound a lot
very similar more,
very similar to Asian stories. So I think people just kind of see him and just think, oh, that's just a black immigrant thing, and they don't, because I did read his autobiography, and I did find it interesting. I'm like, you know, this guy is he's raised by a white family, basically. I mean, his father is African, but he played no role in his life, and I was wondering why his story felt so much like a immigrant story. You know, and then I realized it's the Asian father. I think that, you know, and
yeah, living the Indonesian stepfather, right?
The Indonesian stepfather. I think that's where he got a lot of those first generation immigrant kind of tics from.
Yeah, because I sourced this at one point because I wrote an article about it. But, you know, he was a much bigger influence in his life than they had ever really talked about in like his autobiographies and stuff. Like they kind of downplayed the degree to which that his stepfather was actually a father figure to him, and they really, really focused on his mother.
And they focused on his father in a weird way too, considering how little physical presence his father actually really had.
Yeah, yeah. They talked a lot about the missing Kenyan father, and I think the Asian angle just made him unrelatable. You know, like, so they just didn't play up. They really minimized that part. But if you look at his child, I mean, he grew up in Hawaii, which is a very Asian place, you know.
Great point. You're right.
He was surrounded by Asian people. He grew up in Jakarta. I saw him. I'm telling you, man. I saw, you know, that when he went to Vietnam, he went to Hanoi with the late Anthony Bourdain, Miss God, you know, rest his soul. The two of them sat down to eat pho, you know, like the Vietnamese beef noodles in Hanoi. And Obama looked like he was so at home sitting in this like dingy, you know, noodle shop in Vietnam. And he was like, you know, this really reminds me when I was a kid in Jakarta.
Do you know what I think the culture is? Do you know what I think the culture is? I don't think it's Asian culture or Caribbean culture or Nigerian culture. I think it's colonized culture. I think being colonized creates a certain type of mindset. Like Frantz Fanon talked about it a lot. He talked about the comprador class, the striver bourgeoisie class, the class that comes up of you know, doctors, lawyers, and whatever, and you know, people who get really invested in, you know, being educated in the colonizing country or being the comprador class is a very interesting concept. And what he describes is basically that you see it in India, you see it in
East Asia for sure.
Yeah, yeah, you see it in a lot of colonizing.
We use it all the time. We say comprador it's like Asian people online will use that as an insult. You know, sort of like a just the insult to fucking comprador or whatever, you know. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, we'll yeah, and that other. Totally exists in Haiti and stuff. And, you know, Indonesia was colonized, I'm sure, right?
Yeah, by the Dutch, yeah. In Japan and, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. But so
the Dutch,
yeah,
for sure. A lot of, there's a lot of celebrities who are actually Dutch Indonesian that, like, any, like, white celebrity with the name Van, check to see if they're part Indonesian. Like, Van Halen, part Indonesian, half Indonesian. That
oh, interesting. Zach
Morrison guy, part Indonesian. A lot of the sort of, like, people with a Dutch last name are part Indonesian, actually.